Welcome back to the DGS here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX, 206 Central Time. I'm John Hancock sitting in for Dave Glover. He'll be back with you. In fact, the whole gang will be back with you on Monday, and much anticipated, I'm sure. Well, our next guest is somebody that I've known for 40 years. We were both young Republicans back then. We were actually young at the time. And he went on to an illustrious career. He was the floor leader of the Republican caucus in the state House of Representatives when I had a cup of coffee there, and went on to be a very effective congressman from West St. Louis County. The senator from Missouri in 2002 elected was Jim Talent, who is with us. James, how are you, buddy?
I'm fine, John, but I have to say I winced when you mentioned that 40. We've been friends for 40. Yeah, I'm glad we've been friends, but we're not as young as we used to be.
We are not. You're kind of a hard guy to keep up with. So tell me what all you're involved with these days.
Well, I do a lot of the national security space. I'm with the Reagan Institute, the chairman of their National Leadership Council, and I chair task forces for them. I'm a partner in a public affairs firm. I do some national press and national security issues. I'm a regular on a podcast that UU sponsors. Not as active as I used to be, but still pretty involved.
Well, you are very involved, and we're always smarter after a conversation with Jim Talent, as we will be here today. I want to start off with China, the threat that they pose our country. There's a lot of focus, of course, on Ukraine, a lot of focus on the Middle East. But China's just kind of out there, and they pose some pretty significant challenges to our country.
Yeah, they do. And whenever you want to sort of do a global analysis of that kind, you have to look at what the objectives are of the other country that you're dealing with. So the Chinese have the immediate objective of dominating their strategic environment in East Asia, and they claim sovereignty, actual territorial sovereignty over, for example, the East and South China Sea, which are international waters through which about 50% of the world's shipping passes. So that's an immediate problem for the United States, because our right to move, trade, and travel in the world is a vital national interest, not to mention the fact that they are asserting those rights by, for example, coercing the Philippines and Japan, who are our treaty allies. More broadly, they want to replace the existing international order with a hierarchy with them at the top. And the big problem is that they've engaged in the biggest military buildup probably in history, but certainly in the last 100-plus years. And they are now a peer competitor of the United States. That's a Pentagon term. And given their proximity, the fact that they're in East Asia, the proximity, they have a Navy that is substantially bigger than ours, the biggest missile arsenal in the world. Yeah, it's a big problem, because we have to deter them from trying to achieve their objectives through open kinetic warfare. And I fear, and I think most people on both sides of the aisle in Washington fear, that deterrence is failing, so we can have a war there in the next few years. Yep, that's a problem.
Yeah, and, you know, you think about if there were some kind of a conflict, I mean, Taiwan sitting there, or that thing could erupt at any moment, and then what do we do? One thing I've always wanted to ask you, and I never have, when we gave the Bagram Air Force Base, or when we just abandoned it, did that create any kind of geopolitical imbalance between us and China?
Well, I wouldn't say that created an imbalance, but Afghanistan was an important intelligence node for us. I mean, I was opposed to leaving it under any circumstances for that reason. American troops were not involved in direct combat there. They were doing combat support for the Afghans. We only had, I think, at the end, about 3,000 troops doing that. We sacrificed a lot to be in that position with Afghanistan, and I would have liked to stay and continue to enjoy the benefits of our sacrifice. We did open up by leaving. We created a vacuum. The Chinese are filling it to some extent, but everybody has difficulty dealing with the Taliban. The broader issue is that Afghanistan is now a nest for terrorist organization and planning, which increases the threat to the homeland. And, of course, the fact that the way we left was such a disaster has empowered the Taliban and undermined our credibility around the world. It's really, it's just almost inconceivable how that whole operation was just such a debacle from beginning to end.
Well, and we've foreshadowed it, right? We announced that we were going to do it, and then, you know, that usually is a recipe for problems. And yeah, we lost 13 American lives that day.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're going to leave, you want to get out all the people who have trusted you and work with you and are going to be killed if you leave them. That's number one, which means you have to organize that plan. You do not want to leave behind billions and billions of dollars worth of equipment.
Right.
You've seen the lists of that, right? And you want it to be orderly so you don't lose 13 Americans and a lot of other people in leaving. And this is a, you pushed a button of mine. If I get going on this, I'm going to rant, because that was a failure, I believe, in the White House, the National Security Council. That's the organization that's responsible for coordinating agencies to carry out, you know, the president's directives. And there was just a total failure, and nobody was ever held accountable. It was very, very bad, John.
Yeah, it really was. And I, you know, the further we get away from it, I think the less people remember how bad that was. But that was in the history of the American military. That was one of our worst moments. You know, it truly was.
Yeah, it really was. Although you talk to people at DOD, they will tell you, and they're correct, I think, largely. They carried out their end of it. It's just that they were working with a number of different agencies, and the failure, I think, from an agency perspective was in the State Department. But, John, everybody who knows Washington knows that the State Department is really not capable of planning and executing an operation like that. I mean, you have to understand how these agencies work. And again, it took central direction. I mean, we're getting a little bit into political science here, but the only coordinating node in the executive branch is the White House. So when you have a high priority interagency operation, the White House has to be involved. And I mean involved effectively. I mean, that's from the outside looking at it. That's where I saw the problem. I'll give a name, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor. I think he should have been held accountable for that, and he wasn't.
Yeah, and, you know, there's always been this natural tension between state and defense. They don't get along well, never have. So that's a tightrope you've got to walk delicately, I would imagine, in matters like this. But
yeah, what should have happened was, as soon as they knew that the president ordered them to leave by a certain date, is that as he convenes meetings, either at the principal level, that's the secretaries, or the deputy level, that's the deputy secretaries, and says, okay, I want you all to work together. I want you to produce a plan. I want you to do it quickly. And then you have to ensure, you know, meet regularly, stay on the phone, ensure that everybody is carrying out their part of the plan, and report back to the president in case, for example, the government is falling and you have to delay it. I mean, and, you know, when I saw the interviews with the president, who was, you know, misstating the facts on the ground, I thought, he's not being informed here. So there was a failure on a lot of different levels. They've investigated it, but I still don't think we know everything that happened.
Yeah, we know a lot of the unfortunate details. I want to take you over to Ukraine right now. That conflict continues on. There's been talk about U.S. sending missiles and supporting deeper strikes from Ukraine into Russia. Is there any reasonable, timely end in sight for this thing? And B, what does a conclusion of this thing look like?
Yeah. Well, when that war started, I wrote a column saying it was very much in America's interest to support the Ukrainians because Russia under Vladimir Putin had made itself an adversary to the United States and our interests, and not just in Eastern Europe. I mean, it would take the rest of the interview for me to go through everything that he was doing there. But even more importantly, in the Middle East, where he was an ally even then of Iran, and especially in East Asia, which we started talking about at the beginning of the interview, where he and Xi Jinping have declared, you know, their unlimited friendship for each other. And so it was very much in our interest to weaken the Russian state. That has happened. Okay. In other words, on a strategic level, Putin has lost. And that was confirmed when Sweden and Finland joined NATO. It was exactly the opposite of what Putin was hoping. The problem is, the fact that he's lost doesn't mean Ukraine has won. And I don't. And then I wrote a column about a year and a half ago saying it's not in America's interest to finance what is essentially a stalemated battlefield indefinitely. So I thought we needed to work for an agreement, basically a ceasefire up along existing lines or something like it. But we would admit Ukraine to NATO, whether Putin liked it or not, which would guarantee and protect their borders. And then we could focus on rebuilding Ukraine, which, frankly, the Europeans should pay for, since they're largely responsible for this whole thing. The problem is getting Putin to the table, because in order to get him to the table, I think he has to believe that he's losing ground militarily. And so I think it's absolutely fine to let the Ukrainians attack Russian territory or invade Russian territory. And that's the way I think this will end, is when we get strong leaders who make it clear to Putin that he's, the longer this goes on, the worse it's going to be for him, but that he can get an agreement that allows him to save face. That's what I think we need.
Well, there you have it. And timeline, I know it's all just speculation, but is this something that can get done in the next several months?
No.
Let me ask it this way. Donald Trump claims he can end it before he takes the oath of office on January 20.
Well, I think it is, of course, that's one of the ways Trump communicates, is he makes big claims. I don't think the war would have happened if Trump had been president. I think deterrence failed, in part because Biden appeased Putin in the first year. He gave him a rollover of the New START treaty without conditions. He waived the sanctions on Nord Stream, and he gave him a summit without conditions. So I think if we get different leadership and it's clear both that we're not going to let Ukraine fail in this, we can't abandon another ally, but also that we will negotiate an agreement that allows Putin to keep some of his gains so he can claim he got something out of it, I think we have a chance to get a deal. Yeah, that's the path to it. And then there are other levers we can pull to make it more difficult for Russia. And, you know, those are like, some of that's classified. It's not that I'm read into it, but there are things we can do. And I think that will work. And I how long it will take, I don't know.
Jim Talent, it's always an honor to speak with you, sir. Thanks so much for taking a little piece of your day to spend it here with us on the DGS. Dave and the gang will be back next week. Want to thank Jim Talent. Michael Kelly from his deathbed joins us next on KMOX. Cold winds were blowing. It was late winter in the year of our Lord, 2020. And this little thing was happening all over the world. People were coming down with what they called then the coronavirus. Something emanating out of a laboratory in Wuhan, China. People all over the world, millions of them died from COVID. And one man in the entire world managed to somehow escape that virus until this week. That man is Michael Kelly. Welcome to the COVID Sufferers of the World United, Michael.
Yeah, this is my first time. I'm no longer a virgin. It was,
there's a sentence he's never said before in his life.
Legit stuff, you guys. It's legit.
Yeah.
I thought I was better today. You know, I woke up sweating in bed, and I thought I was better. And now it feels like it's about 9:30 at night, and it feels like it's coming back on me. So
really?
Yeah, I may have it for another night.
So what's the, are you not sleeping? Are you able to eat? Can you taste your food? What's happening out there?
Yeah, I can taste the food. But no, I'm not able to sleep at night. I get the chills.
Oof.
And then you get the sweats where Oof. You like do fall asleep and you start sweating. Oof. Then you get the chills again. And like I said, this morning I woke up and I thought, man, I've licked this. And, maybe my stressful day of sitting around has caused it to return.
And so you've had no human physical interaction now for how many days?
About 3 days. Oh. It feels like COVID all over again. It feels like I'm quarantined in my house. I went out Tuesday night where I think I may have gotten this. I went to a really cool bar in the city.
Well, there you go.
Down by the Bevo Mill called Tim's Chrome Bar. And it's like a 70s disco themed place, John. It's so cool. The bartender was in like this gold 70s outfit with this big afro, and it was really cool. They had people with roller skates on, etc. But anyway, I was there for a Bob Ross night. We were painting like Bob Ross. Do you remember Bob Ross?
Of course, the Happy Tree guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the best. And
so all the TVs in the entire place were playing Bob Ross. And you could get a burger and fries or, you know, some food.
Yeah.
Wait, did you see Pulp Fiction?
No.
Okay. It's kind of like the diner scene in Pulp Fiction. Okay, sure. Yeah. It's kind of like the diner scene in Pulp Fiction, this place. I mean, not as elaborate, but they had the burger and fries and that kind of stuff. And then what you did is you paid a certain amount of money and you got this little easel. And when I say little easel, it's like 4 inches tall. And a couple of little paint-by-number things. And you sat there and you painted like Bob Ross. And who would have thought that there'd be a more relaxing way to contract COVID?
Well, there you go. Gosh, well, just the whole concept there is enough to make me want to stay home for 3 days. Wow. Man.
When was the last time you even went out to a bar like that, where you're just going out to be social with a group of people and going for whatever's going to happen?
Never. I mean, well, it's been a long time. You and I used to go to that Post place on Fridays when we taped the show, but we don't tape the show anymore. So that's out. But, well, buddy, I hope you're up on your feet soon enough. And so are you going to try and get out and walk a few miles this afternoon, or are you too?
No, I was. I was anticipating getting walking. You know, I've been on this walking kick, so I was anticipating on getting out there today. But, no, I think I got another day of not opening the front door of my house and just figuring it out. But you get a lot of time on the streaming service. And might I recommend a show on Apple Plus called Bad Monkey and Vince Vaughn.
Bad Monkey. All right.
Oh, yeah.
We might get into that one around the corner. We got to get to the news first because it's 2:28. And that time check is brought to you by FIRA Capital Management. Michael Kelly, when we return after the news on KMOX. Welcome back to the DGS. John Hancock and Michael Kelly along for this hour to spend time with you. Dave, Rachel, Kevin, and the gang will all be back on Monday. Andrew's here with me, keeping me company, keeping me on time. Thank you, Andrew. Hey, Michael.
Also playing those songs that you like so much from those bands.
He's nailing the music today. I mean,
I was hoping for it.
It really adds to your, you know, pump up in this. Mm-hmm. Yes, Michael.
Have you ever seen Rush live, John? I know they don't tour anymore, but did you see them when they were live?
Never saw them live. No.
I did.
Great regret of mine. Yeah?
I did. I saw them at Riverport or whatever they call it. Mm. And I also saw them in New Orleans at
that's cool.
The University of New Orleans little basketball stadium there. That guy's voice, he's just so unique with that voice. And I was checking out some of their videos yesterday. You know, that's what you do when you're laying around.
Right, yeah.
Boy, those were some cheesy old videos with the big feathered hair, etc.
Oh, yeah. Neil Peart, their drummer, I think is the best drummer ever in rock and roll history. And Geddy Lee, huge baseball fan. He's got a baseball collection in his house that is just absolutely breathtaking. He's got Babe Ruth autographs. He's got Christy Mathewson autographs, memorabilia of all sorts of things. And, you know, he's a Canadian. So, you know, it's really, he's got this passion for baseball, which I really respect and enjoy.
Hey, speaking of baseball, dude, the highlights last night, I was watching ESPN and they broke in. The record, and then I wound up tracking the game the rest of the evening. I had no idea that I was witnessing one of the more illustrious performances in the history of baseball.
You can make a case that that was the single greatest game ever by any player in the history of baseball.
Well, I'm sure my father, if he were alive, would be able to articulate why Bob Gibson's no-hitter in the World Series was a far, far better performance.
Well, he didn't throw a no-hitter in the World Series.
Or in the, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, in the shutout in the World Series.
Yeah, there you go.
He hit a grand slam, I think, in that game, too. And yeah, that was a great game by the Gibby. I usually I look so forward to the weekend.
Uh-huh.
we're doing a garage sale. So we've been in this neighborhood for 20, almost a quarter of a century. Every year they have the Chesterfield Hill garage sale. And anybody that wants to can open up the old garage door and let total strangers wander through your collection of crap that you've accumulated over the course of your life. I've always successfully managed to avoid participating in that sucker. Well, unbeknownst to me, my lovely wife, who I love with all my heart.
St. Georgian.
Yeah. Signed us up for this miserable garage sale. And So
did you go through your cologne closet and pull out your half-empty cologne bottle?
I am.
Put 25 cents on?
I am blown away by the amount of crap that we have accumulated in this house. It's unbelievable. I've still got wedding gifts that my daughter got 5 years ago in my basement. They've gone from an apartment to their own home, and all of their crap is still in my basement. So some of that stuff, and if you bought them that gift, I apologize. If you want to get it back, you can just come over to the house on Saturday.
What time does the garage sale go down, and will you be the person sitting there with the cash box in front of you?
8 o'clock in the morning. So I've got to get up and drive my daughter and son-in-law and granddaughter to the airport at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
Come home for the garage sale, and yeah, I'll be there.
Now listen, the key to a proper garage sale, John, is appropriate pricing.
Uh-huh.
I know this because I can recall greatly my mother wanted to do a garage sale, much like what you've described at Georgian. The whole neighborhood's doing it.
Yep.
And so that whole week, all the cars got moved, or the two cars got moved out of the garage.
Yep.
And the garage was closed, and my mom had these tables set up, and she must have sat for, you know, hours pricing a nickel here, a dime there, whatever it might be.
Yep.
And so comes the debt. My father did not want to participate.
Yep,
he was John Hancock.
I'm right there with you, Robert.
And so, like you said, now it's a garage hunt sale. So 8 o'clock means 7 o'clock for most of these folks
these
who
get,
will literally be parked in your neighborhood waiting for the garage doors to open. And my mom immediately takes off to go see what all the neighbors' junk is. Like she's going to buy their junk after, you know, spending all the time pricing her junk.
Bad plan. Bad plan.
And so my father implemented a sales strategy with me of, oh, you like that? You have to take 10 other items for free.
Hey, now,
We were done in 45 minutes. He closed the garage door. My mom came home and she said, what happened? He says, we sold out. And she said, where's the money? And he like pulled like $40 out of his pocket. Like, see,
we've sold our junk. You know, I guess
you
every person accumulates contraptions over the course of their lives. And we went through a phase, not we, my lovely wife, who I love with all my heart. years ago, this is what we affectionately call in our marriage. This was the Home Shopping Network chapter of our marriage. A lot of Home Shopping Network watching going on.
1-800-JUNK.
She saw this thing and she thought, wow, you know, she's got back problems. This thing is going to stop. So it's one of these deals. What do they call it? It's got a name. It's expensive.
Buymaster.
Nobody. You hang upside down.
Zero gravity something or another.
Yeah, and some guy got on the Home Shopping Network hanging upside down and sold my wife this thing. And it's heavy. It's heavier than crap. And so you put it together, and then, oh, my gosh, she straps her little ankles into that sucker, and then you flip it around, and there she is, just hanging upside down. And I thought, wow, how's that? Is it working? Oh, yes, it works great. Well, apparently, we haven't used it now since Donald Trump was president.
Right. And, but I'm sure it can hold, clothes that come out of the dryer that are still a little damp.
Well, it does have that. So, but that sucker is going to be out in my driveway. So if you are out there within the sound of my voice and you've thought to yourself for years that if I could just find a way to hang myself upside down for like an hour, it would change my life. If that's you, The Chesterfield Hill Garage Sale starts at 8 a.m. Saturday morning.
Are you going to have a price to sell? Because, like,
oh, yeah.
If it's overpriced, John, people are looking for deals here.
Oh, they're going to get a deal.
It's true.
They're going to get a deal.
And what you're looking for, what you've got to remember, this is not about a profit motive.
No.
This is about
getting rid of
stuff leaving your premises.
Yeah, I know it.
So this is even better because somebody's going to show up, look at this thing, and say, here, I'll give you a couple of bucks to take it away, because usually you'd be paying somebody to take it away. So price this thing appropriate. If somebody even gets near it telling you like that, come on, I can negotiate.
You know, I'm married to Sears Roebuck and Company. She's she's determined to make some cash on this deal. We'll see how it goes. I had to go to the bank and get all the ones. I walked out. I looked like a drug dealer walking out of the bank today. And so,
drug dealers don't deal in ones, John. It's been a long time since you bought drugs.
Well, that I can assure you is true, Michael. That's right. You were saying you were watching something on the tube that you liked before we took the last break.
Bad Monkey with Vince Vaughn. So I heard you describing. I heard you describing to Ranj and company about how you were trying to fit through those bars.
Oh, that was the worst.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason I like this show is it's kind of a dark comedy, like a Gemstones, a Righteous Gemstones kind of thing. It stars Vince Vaughn. It's a murder mystery, but it's humorous. And being big guys like we are, John, 6 foot plus, I mean, there's nothing demure or small or any movement that we make that isn't a little bit awkward being that big. And so watching Vince Vaughn do anything makes me feel good because I'm like, look at how awkward he looks.
Really?
So, well, you know what I mean? Like a big, like he's just a big dopey guy like you and I. And
what role is he in this show? Is he the detective in the thing?
He is. Well, that's a good question. Yes, he is. He is a detective in it. And that's kind of where the story goes. It takes place in Miami and in the Keys and the Bahamas. And so there's lots of, summertime vibes to it. And it's just a good little mystery. And the guy makes you feel good.
Well, there it is. So that's how you've been busying yourself in your state of COVID issues.
Yeah. Between that and trying to decide, read how much NyQuil I can take, all these medicines that you buy, you know, you go to the doctor and they tell you, the pharmacist, and they say, get this and that to help you with these symptoms.
Yeah.
So I did that. I'm miserable. So, you know, Wednesday morning, I'm miserable. I can barely move. I get back from the drugstore and now I'm trying to read the damn darn instructions. And I cannot, and it's so small, John. So now I'm taking a picture of it, blowing it up with my phone to figure out how many of these pills I can take when without hurting myself.
Six of them. You just take six of them.
You can't take six, dude.
Yeah.
This one pill that I got, some Mucinex stuff, they say you can only take one every 12 hours.
Yeah, that's what they say. But look, if you're sick, you know, I'm not a doctor. But, yeah.
Clearly not.
you got a toothache, six Advil.
With a drug consumption like you have, it's amazing to me that you would even think a drug dealer would have $1 bills in their pocket.
You got a little backache, six Advil. You know, and so you're sneezing a lot, six, what do you call them, Mucinexes?
Yeah, I guess.
You take six of them, buddy.
Have you ever met Mark Close?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mark Close used to be on the show with us. And one time Dave was describing how he had a really bad headache. And so he took, I think, three Tylenol all at the same time. And,
you don't want to take three Tylenol. Take six Advil.
Close famously exclaimed, take it easy, Janis Joplin.
Well, I mean, you want to get better.
Taking three Tylenol.
See, I think they reduce your doses so you stay sicker longer. That's my theory.
Okay.
I don't know, Hancock. You're sounding to me like the guy in college that they'd find pills on the ground. He'd say, let's take them. I mean, if you're willing to take six of anything, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, you know, you do want to read the bottle. I mean, for those of you playing along at home, you can't read the bottle. That's the issue.
And you know what? And that is the truth. And
you know what we don't have anymore?
What?
When's the last time you've seen a magnifying glass?
My dad's got him.
Now there's a handy item to have around.
He's got a his eyes aren't so great anymore, and he's got to read at home sometimes, so he'll break out.
That's what you need there, but that's what I'm going to get you for your birthday. I'm going to get you a magnifying glass.
It'll
change your life, man.
Don't you think that something's so important? I mean, we have drugs that we are literally putting behind counters so that people can't buy a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Don't you think we ought to force them to print the stuff on the box a little bit bigger so we can read how many that we're supposed to take in how many hours?
Well, that's what the pharmacist is for. You know, they go to school for 100 years to become a pharmacist. So then they know you can't read the bottle. So you got to ask the pharmacist. And that's the way, you know, that's how they part of how they impart their skill to the public out there. You should have asked the pharmacist, how many of these suckers am I supposed to take?
I want you to go home to your son-in-law, who's a pharmacist,
yes,
and ask him now. Say, I told Kelly that he should just take six of whatever he's got in that bottle. Don't you think that's a good thing there, son, doctor? See what his response is.
All right, I'll take his temperature, as we say in the pharmaceutical business. Michael Kelly. I'm John Hancock. We need to step aside for just a moment, but Michael's going to close out this hour with us, and that's just around the corner on KMOX. Welcome back to the DGS. John Hancock sitting in for Dave Glover. Dave and the gang will be back on Monday, as per usual. I don't know, Michael, if Michael Kelly is with me from his COVID bed there in the Central West End. I don't know if you saw Amazon announced that they are going to require all of their employees to be back in the office as of January 1. Now, you've been convalescing there at home. You think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
Yep. No, it makes some sense. Listen, you and I had two major things that we were doing this week. One, you're doing without me today, and I'm grateful. And two was a meeting that we had earlier in the week that we were supposed to do together. I was able to participate via Zoom in that meeting. But, John, so much of your human interaction and relationship building is lost when you don't have that ability to be in the room with folks. And I don't know, these 3 days of having to do this kind of made me realize, hey, look, work from home, it serves a purpose at times, you know. I don't see a problem with a couple days a week. But I think you've got to have that human interaction with your coworkers so that there's just an intangible that exists. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think there's real value in having that, the collaborative spirit and all. You know, my situation, I work out of my home. And my partner, I have a 50-50 partner in my business, and he lives in Jefferson City. So we literally don't see each other very often. Talk every day.
Sounds like a perfect relationship.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think he's happy about it.
You split the money.
Yeah, we split the money, and that's exactly right. And so, you know, but there is real value, I think, in having that human. I mean, just today, I walk in here at 11:18, and there's Andrew, faithful Andrew, sitting there.
Uh-huh.
He's got a stack of crap, Michael. I mean, yep. A stack. I mean, I could talk about this stack of crap for like 6 weeks. all the stuff he's pulling out there, and then you know, we're just talking and interacting and having, you know, sharing a little bit of our lives with one another. And great guy, Andrew. And so yeah, and then out of that came this magnificent program that we're providing everyone. so
John. Yeah. So if you're looking for a ride home tonight, see if Andrew will give you a ride home in his car. I don't know how often you listen to the show, but
yeah, I don't think
that'd be a nice segment for us.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be doing. How is the car holding up these days, Andrew?
Terrible.
Yeah?
Yeah, falling apart.
So do you ever take a day and just like say Saturday, sweetheart, let's go clean that car?
That's so much work.
Well, it is, but
it's so much work. I'd rather just have it be messy.
Andrew, what are you paying a gallon for gasoline right now? Because say you're carrying an extra 300-400 pounds of junk in the car, that's costing you more gasoline, right? Just a half hour taking stuff out will fix that.
First of all, the only 400 pounds of junk in that car belongs to me. there's probably like 20 pounds of junk in the car.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because it's mostly,
I'll take the over.
You know.
Now, is there stuff that you think maybe you'll need sometime, or is it just literally junk?
Some of it is stuff that maybe I'll need one. Like, there's a blanket back there somewhere.
You never know.
You never know. You need
to pull a blanket out.
Could need a blanket.
In the car.
Well, if it's like,
John, do you have a blanket in your car?
I do not have a blanket in my car.
That's good. It's smart to have one.
I do have a car cover in my trunk for a car.
You, of all people, should have a blanket in your car. John Hancock got lost going to a meeting that they gave him directions and a map to get to. He got lost. And then me, sitting on the Zoom in my house with COVID, is having to try to steer this man in to Washington University because he cannot follow the map they gave him.
Gosh, Michael, we're out of time. John Hancock, we'll be back. Our NFL insider.
I love you, buddy.
Love you too, man. Get better. See you. Bye.
Bye.